Welcome one and all once again to Dual Worlds in episode 108. This week we have a very, very small news week. It's like there's some type of big show coming up, I don't know. But before we get to that, we have our panel of gamers joined this week by Daniel.
Hello.
Martin.
Hello.
And Jason.
Hi.
Hi, everybody. So, yeah, we're going to kick it off as we always do with what we've been saying. And I assume we're all saying new stuff since this is a busy week for new releases.
I have, actually. I have.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, new-ish.
So, Daniel, what are you playing?
So, after all this, after this whole piracy story with Green Hot Games and stuff, I thought, you know what, I'd download the demo for Game Dev Tycoon and see how it is, and it's actually kind of good, so I bought the game and I've been playing it today.
You didn't pirate it?
No, I didn't pirate it, because I support my favorite industry, Jason.
Well, I just bring it up.
No, I didn't pirate it. No, apparently, so if you pirate the game, what happens is your game company, it's kind of like Theme Hospital if you ran a game developer, or Game Dev Story if you played that. In fact, it's very much like Game Dev Story. If you pirate the game, what happens is eventually everybody pirates your games in the game, and your company goes bankrupt.
Brilliant.
Because of it. And then it asks you
best
to buy the
idea.
Game. The Game Dev Story, that is. Game Dev Tycoon, even. And there were people that were complaining on the Greenlight page that they couldn't research DRM or they couldn't figure out how to, and people their company kept going bankrupt, and they were like, look, you pirated our game. Like, how is... Here's the thing, right, is how is the irony lost on these people?
Like, yeah.
How do you do that? Like, pirate a game about making games, and then when people pirate your game in the game? I don't know. So I played the demo. I downloaded it off the Windows Store. That's the only thing that was actually useful because it was easy to get to on there. I liked it, so I bought it not on the Windows Store because the last thing I want to do is to go back to Windows 7 at some point, which will probably happen, and have it locked out from me. So I bought it on their website. You get a Mac Linux Windows copy, which is pretty cool. And the way the game plays is fairly simple. You start off as a garage developer on your own, and you get a budget of, I think, 70k, and you can make a game. So, and there are it's based somewhat on real life. So, you have the NES or the TES, as it's called in the game, and there's Nintendo called Nintendo. You know, there's Sega and all that, and you have to. You know, you work your way up by making small games and stuff, and sometimes you'll get hits. Like I made my first Game Boy game, and it's actually my only Game Boy game, I think. No, I made one other. Was a casual sports game, and it sold over 1 million copies. I was like, yes. It was called Lacrosse Fighters, and it was really cool. So,
sure.
Yeah, and you have to pay licensing fees if you choose to develop for a console, and sometimes they're not cheap, sometimes they're very expensive, like the...
That's exactly like Game Dev Story.
Yeah, and... but the way it differs from Game Dev Story is, in Game Dev Story, you just pick what kind of like theme and what genre you want to make, and then depending on your staff member's stats, they just throw something out. Whereas in Game Dev Tycoon, you get some sliders, and basically it says you have dialogue in the game, you have gameplay, and you have the engine. Which ones do you want to focus on more? And it gives you a bar at the bottom, which sort of shows you how much time is dedicated to each thing.
So, and then when you can I choose 100% dialogue from a sports game?
Yes, you can turn dialogue all the
awesome.
Way down, and then turn gameplay all the way up if you want.
No, I want a visual novel sports game.
You can do that. You can do the opposite if you want. You can have really crap gameplay but really good dialogue in your casual sports game.
Is that not a thing yet? It sounds like a visual novel sports game would be right up your pants alley.
I would totally play that.
And then eventually when you get more staff members, you can allocate them to different things, and they have sort of certain loads that they can take. And if you overwork somebody, then the work that they do and what you've told them to, it won't be as good and stuff. It's kind of cool.
But this is EA.
Well, I've got a story about EA, and that's coming. That's coming. You might have seen it on my Twitter, but if you haven't, you're in for a treat. So anyway, yeah, when you get to $1 million in sales, you get an office and you can start hiring people, and then you can rent out booths at G3, and that's not cheap usually. And you get fans, so it tells you how many fans you've got, and it's like, so if you called yourself Bungie, it's kind of funny because you can just go through their backlog, and so you make a casual sports game and call it NOP, and then you get some, and it says, congratulations, you've got 25 fans, and it's like, yeah! And then you can make Myth and Halo if you want, and then you just make nothing but sci-fi first-person shooters after that. And you get like research, and you can and something that I don't think Game Dev Story has is it has sort of a mechanic where you can build your own game engines, and if you pick your game to use that engine, you're limited to what features that engine has. So if you've got one engine that has open world, and one engine that doesn't, you can't use it in the one that doesn't, which is kind of cool. But engines are expensive to make; they cost a lot of money. So I don't know if you could do publishing deals in Game Dev Story. You can in Game Dev Tycoon. What happened was, is my Lacrosse Fighters on the Game Boy, right? I decided I was going to make a sequel once I researched sequels, and it turned out to be pants, and I got no sales despite the massive hype. So I thought, you know, I'll take some publishing deals because obviously they'll pay for my development costs then. And EA, believe it or not, was the only one reasonable offer, right? So I thought, yeah, I'll do it. It's like electronic, massive. Electronic Mass or something like that, which is their equivalent of Electronic Arts. I can't quite remember what it's called. But so I signed up with the equivalent of EA, and then they said that I needed to get a 7 out of 10 on my game score, otherwise they would fine me, right? So I made a game, it turned out to be like a 5 out of 10, which was, and then they fined me, and then I went on to sell them 1.4 million copies. So I made a successful game for them, but they fucking robbed my money anyway.
So that sounds like reality.
Real life. Just like real life. So yeah, it's really fun. It's $8 or £6.
I don't, or free if you want to pirate it and have your game sold.
Or if you don't want to have any sales and you want your company to go bankrupt in the game, then you can pirate it if you want.
Or become a third party.
And it's really cool. It's basically, if you like Game Dev Story and you wanted it on PC, this is it.
Is it on Steam?
It's not on Steam, it's on Greenlight. So it's if you buy from their website, you get a Windows, Mac, and Linux copy, and when it gets on Steam, they'll give you a key for Steam.
Okay, that's great.
Or if you use their website, it's DRM-free, so win-win, I suppose.
Yep.
Yeah. It's at greenheartgames.com, I think. Just Google Greenheart Games and you'll find it. It's really cool. Don't pirate
the name of a game, I guess.
Yeah, on the name of the game, Game Dev Tycoon. It's really cool. I recommend it.
Okay. Have you been playing anything else?
Poker Knight 2, which is they admit that it's the unnecessary sequel to the first Poker Knight. And to be fair, I only bought it because it has Borderlands 2 skin unlocks.
you know how dumb that sounds, right?
It's really dumb, but I don't care, really. $5, it's kind of funny. Brock Sampson's kind of funny. Nobody else is funny, and Claptrap's in it, so expect him to annoy the crap out of you. It's Poker Night, but with Omaha Hold'em Poker, and with Brock Sampson from Venture Brothers, Claptrap, Borderlands, Ash from Army of Darkness, but it's not Bruce Campbell, unfortunately.
It's the new guy?
I think so. But Bruce Campbell is Ash in the new Evil Dead film, so I don't know.
Yeah, but I don't think he's Ash.
No, he is.
Oh, I thought it was a reboot.
No, you see... Oh, I'm going to ruin this for anyone who hasn't seen it. So if you haven't seen it...
Don't say anything.
Oh, wait. Yeah. I didn't even know it was out already.
It's been out here for a while, so...
It's been out here for a while, too.
I still need to see it, so... Shut up.
Alright, so let's just say this. Stay for the end. If you're an Evil Dead fan, just stay for the end, after the credits. So, yeah, it's not Bruce Campbell's Ash, unfortunately, and it's Sam from Sam and Max. And sometimes Max turns up. And GLaDOS is the dealer. And it's kind of funny, but I think the AI is very inconsistent. Sometimes the game tells you when it's like how much what your chances of winning in the river are, and it could be like 90% in your favor, and then it just feels really crap to see that 10% for whoever else is in the hand, it pays off for them and you lose your money. I mean, and some of the dialogue is repeated, but you know, if you've probably already decided whether you want this game or not, because by whether you like the first one, whether you like the characters, and whether you want any of the unlocks in the game. So, it's an okay game. It's a poker game with AIs. What can I say? Nothing else other than that.
Okay. Anything else, or shall we move on to Jason? Okay, Jason, what have you been saying?
I guess me. Well, this week I've been powering through Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon on 3DS.
Hey, I've been playing that as well.
Oh,
so have
hey.
I.
Did you
because
finish it,
Amazon finally got the new shipment. No, the game was sold out pretty much everywhere in Germany.
Oh, wow. Well, for good reason, because it's a great game.
Yeah,
Germany
so far.
Up there, Luigi.
So far, I like it as well.
So, the way it breaks down is, instead of like where you have one humongous mansion like in the original GameCube game, there's five mansions, and it's they're still pretty sizable, but you know, they're definitely broken down a little more. And then each mansion has its own kind of progression of levels where you'll do different things in each level. You know, you'll focus on one part of the mansion, or you'll have different objectives, and through the course of those five levels, you'll end up seeing everything around the mansion. And the last mission usually has you running around through pretty much all of it, like, you know, to collect certain things or to clean out the rest of the ghosts or whatever. It's a really interesting game just because I really feel like there's nothing else like it. I mean, you run around, it's got kind of an Alan Wake mechanic, I guess, where you flash the ghosts with a light before you can actually attack them. But then,
well, Alan Wake has a Luigi Mansion mechanic to it.
Yeah.
What's that?
Alan Wake has a Luigi's Mansion mechanic to it. Which
well,
is
right. But I mean, I'm explaining because okay, I could be like, okay, the mechanics are like Luigi's Mansion 1. But if you haven't played that, it's not very helpful. But, and then, yeah, a lot of things are based around the vacuum. Basically, you have your flashlight, the vacuum, and this thing called the dark light, which reveals things that are invisible. But so if there's like a chest that's invisible, you shine the dark light where it is, you hold it there and you'll be able to it'll appear basically. And then Nintendo does a really good job kind of working those combinations of those three mechanics into a lot of different ways in the gameplay. Like I feel like throughout the entire game they keep thinking of new ideas. So, oh, how can we apply a twist on these mechanics? You know, from later in the game, you'll face like the ghosts will possess a suit of walking armor, and you can't really attack it. But if it walks over like a carpet, you can use the vacuum to sweep out the carpet. And it's like little things like that where they play a lot with the environment. And it's really well designed. Like, and the puzzles, it's obviously kind of puzzle based too, but
that's actually what I like most about the game. That for wide stretches, it's actually kind of an adventure game.
Yeah.
Just
oh yeah, that's true.
Action based mechanics.
Yeah, I mean, I think the way they describe the combat is it's a fishing game. Because you basically catch the ghost in your net and you have to pull, you know, it's really neat when there's multiple ghosts. And it's one of the things I hate about the game is they never explain the dodge mechanic, but you can dodge while you're...
They explain it later when you actually need it for one of the boss fights.
Okay, explain the dodge to me now because I want to know.
Oh, no, it's just you just press the B button while you have a ghost. Yeah, he will, like, flip and stuff.
Yeah,
and
but
they
you'll
don't,
lose
they,
what suction you had.
Yeah, but you still do damage. It's just that you won't put up that meter, but it helps when you are surrounded by multiple ghosts and stuff like that.
Yeah, but there are useful against the three sisters that are.
Or when they.
No, not the three sisters with the mirrors.
Yeah.
They didn't tell me
no,
that.
They didn't tell me either.
That's when I found out about it. Yeah. Pretty sure.
Yeah. But yeah, I that's that. It's helpful for times like that because you can't get all three of them at once. Because again, that's something else the game doesn't explain. It's like the more ghosts you catch at once, the better you are. Because if you catch like two or three, you get more money.
Yeah, that's what I figured out myself though.
Yeah, like you'll get gold bars and stuff like that, and they don't tell you that. But yeah, they never explain the dodge mechanic, which is pressing B and he'll like flip and stuff, and it helps when ghosts are trying to attack you. I did take the sisters, because one of the complaints I heard coming into this game is like the ghosts didn't have the personalities of the original.
Oh, so disagree.
Yeah, I love the ghosts.
The ghosts are hilarious. Yeah, and there's all these moments where they're playing around with either Luigi or, you know, you'll peek through like a window or a crack in the wall and you'll see them just punking on each other. Like it's just so funny.
I love when I can watch the ghost through a crack in the wall or something like that.
There's so
much goofy stuff happening. It's great.
Yeah, it's very
and I love the ghost dog. Just so
Oh,
cute.
The ghost dog.
I would also say I like the toads.
Oh, yeah. I met one so far.
Yeah, so you're on the same pace as I am. I'm up to the second mansion. Sounds like you are.
No, I finished the second one.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, that's where I've met my first toad. And I don't know why they hate water. That kind of threw me for a loop. But I do love like when they encounter ghosts and they just kind of go running through the room like,
That's the other thing. This game is just incredibly charming.
Yes.
I mean, I took this game on my trip to Bonn where I wanted to take some pictures, and on the train I was just grinning the whole time, actually laughing out loud while stuff was happening. It's just so great. All these animations of Luigi, especially, like, I don't know, some goofy and little stuff, like when you come back and put the ghosts back into the vault, and then at the end, Luigi packs up his things, and then there's this little tip that he does. He corrects basically how this thing sits on his back. Just little things like that, totally unnecessary, but great.
Or when water is cut down or something,
you can go below the water, and then he's like pretending like he's in the shower or stuff like that. It's just awesome.
I always feel bad for him when he does stuff like that. Like, every time he sees like a bed or something to sit on, he always gets comfortable and it always ends up being a trap.
Awesome.
Like, there's one where you have to use like there's like a fountain in the bathroom and he's like, hello! And then it squirts water in his face and it rotates around.
Yeah. That was pretty funny.
My favorite is when if you're just walking around like looking for stuff and he'll start like humming to the theme music.
Oh yeah.
Oh my god, it's pretty charming.
Or how his walking changed between when there's light in the room or there isn't.
Yeah.
Periodically
he'll just trip randomly because he's clumsy.
And we mentioned this. I mentioned this the last time we talked about the game. The other one is, and it's a nice way to do it. Is like when you don't clear a room, but you exit it, he'll come out and he'll shiver a bit.
Yeah.
That there's more work to be done in that room.
You go out of the room, sometimes he like slams the door shut and then
wipes his brow.
And then leans against the door, sigh of relief, and so great.
I love the fact that they pay up that he doesn't want to do this, but he knows he has to. And I think Egad is a jerk because every time you go on a mission, Egad's like, oh, don't worry, I'll be safe down here in my bunker. Like, thank you, Egad.
He doesn't really have to do it. Egad is basically forcing him to do all this stuff.
Boy, Luigi.
Yeah, but it's a pretty, like, it stays fresh through the whole time. Like, coming in, I was like, oh, you know, I like Luigi's Mansion back on GameCube, but, you know, how far can they take these mechanics?
I think they do a better job at mixing stuff up.
Yes, definitely.
They are making way more use of the different mechanics, especially when they are puzzles to solve, I think, than in the first game. The first thing I thought, like, I mean, it's not a long day game, and even halfway through I thought, like, I kind of feel like I've seen it all.
Yeah, and this is kind of what people, you know, like, again, it's kind of where that people said that the first game shines with the ghosts, because each one had to just, each one was like a mini puzzle, like a mini boss battle. And I think, you know, I think that, and I think the fact that that original mansion was all connected are the two things I prefer from the original. But right now, like, this is a much better crafted game, and it's like, it took all those elements, and it's like, okay, we're going to take those elements, and we're going to make a sequel that lives up to it by expanding on everything and making it better.
Also, have any of you tried out the multiplayer? I tried out one match so far.
I couldn't get in. I didn't try that hard. But
me, it works fine. It worked fine, but I actually really enjoyed it. It's pretty fun as well. I wouldn't have guessed that this could have a fun multiplayer portion as well.
Well, I mean, I have to say, to be fair, Nintendo does a good job of making multiplayer games. The problem is they do a terrible job of making online multiplayer games.
I played online, so...
Yeah, I mean, I haven't played it yet, because I wanted to, because it's one of those things, and this is something they do in the Odyssey games that I always hated, is you have to unlock the multiplayer. You have to finish, like, the first 3 or 4 missions, or something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I haven't tried it, just because I haven't played this game, because I mentioned before, I just don't have enough time to play my 3DS. And when I do get a chance, like, I try to do it outside, and the sun's always bright and shiny, and just makes the screen hard to see. But yeah, do you play with 3D on?
Yeah.
The
only time I don't is when there's motion sensor parts, because it just doesn't work that way.
Yeah, exactly. When I'm
Which, on
home,
that
I'm
note,
there
are a few times where they use the gyroscope to do... It's like a tightrope mechanic. Those are by far the most annoying parts of the game. Like, it's just,
that's annoying in every game.
That is very true, but it's particularly poorly done in this game. Like,
yeah. I play with 3D on while I'm at home. When I'm on the go, I turn it off, of course, battery life and all that.
Yeah, I mean, that's in general, because most of the time I play it on the train, and that's never anything good for 3D.
Yeah, but the 3D in this works really well. I mean, it has this diorama thing going for it, so that's why the 3D is actually pretty nice, and I think they also play a lot with depth in a lot of the rooms.
Yeah, and it's nice, and as you know, the vacuum gets a lot of mileage out of it. It's a fun little game, if you can find it, as Jason says.
I mean, so far it's probably one of my favorites this year.
Yeah, out of I've only so far played this and Mario 3D Land on the 3DS, but
we will not talk about your blasphemous opinions here on this show.
Oh, Mario 3D Land is a phenomenal game, but this is much more.
Not have you spread these lies.
Mm-hmm.
I think we just mentioned as well, but it's no 3D Land.
I like more 3D Land as well.
Oh, thank you.
Oh my god. If you don't see Jason and Martin again on this show, you know why.
I mean, dude, I'm an adventure gamer. Don't be surprised. I like the game with adventure elements more.
They're both phenomenal games. I just think, I mean, maybe it will change when I beat it. But I think, you know, and I there's a reason I have platform, which I'll get to in a second. But what else have you been playing, Jason?
The only other thing is I picked up Injustice this week.
We can check that out sometime.
What's that?
I said we can try that out sometime. I picked mine up for $10 yesterday.
Oh, nice. Do you have it on PS3 or 360?
360.
Yeah, I got it on 360 also. I don't know. Does this game have an online pass?
I don't think so.
Okay, good, because I rented it, so we might not. But anyway, that was a huge mistake, because I always forget how awful the D-pad is on the 360. It's like the one flaw on an otherwise perfect controller.
And not only that, is they released a good D-pad version, and they discontinued it.
Yeah. Oh, they discontinued
it? Well, yeah, they discontinued it.
Really?
I think it was long ago.
I think they discontinued the original one, but they have these, like, metallic ones, at least in the States.
No, they were the ones that they discontinued, because they had grey face buttons.
Right. I mean, they discontinued the monochrome controller, but now there's like a metallic red and metallic blue one that also have the D-pad.
Oh, right, okay.
But anyway, I don't have that controller. I have the regular, just black, whatever. And it's awful. And you can't really use the
anti-iron.
Yeah, I tried to use the analog stick, and it just doesn't work that well, because you have to be really precise with the direction, and it's a practice and frustration.
See, it's one of those times where I really didn't want to get the 360 version, but I just have a lot more friends with it.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I would have gotten it for the Wii U or the PS3 beforehand, but it's just like, it's like a fighting game. It's one of those things I prefer to play with friends, but I hate the 360 controller for that. I think we mentioned that when we talked about the demo.
Yes, and it's just, but that aside, I mean, I've only just started playing it last night or yesterday afternoon, so my time's pretty limited, but I'm enjoying it a lot so far. I like the roster. It is very Batman heavy, which I think you mentioned, Earl, on an article before.
Yeah.
Which
I mean,
is
they're even getting now another DLC character that's from the Batman universe, basically.
Yeah, so I've so far not been able to try all the characters, but the ones I have tried all feel really different. It definitely it feels a lot like it's Mortal Kombat, the last Mortal Kombat, with DC characters. It's an evolution of that original idea. Like, for example, the mechanics for like the special moves and stuff is all the same. It's always two directions and one of the attack buttons. But then they add a bunch of stuff. Like, there's a lot of interactive stuff in the levels. You can get to different areas of the levels. I was going through the tutorial yesterday, and I was just like, holy crap, there's just so many different things you can do. And that really, I've never played a fighting game with this many options, like, all the time. And then I was playing a little bit through the story mode, and it's, like, really well done. It's that the graphics are kind of shitty, but it's interesting how they throw this huge world of DC characters together and get them to fight one another, even like heroes on heroes, and you know, typical comic book multi-universe stuff helps out. So what did you think about it, Earl?
I haven't played it yet because I am growing my FAR's backlog of games this year. I was going to say what I have seen of the story, and I read the tie-in comic, is it's batshit insane.
Yeah.
Which is one of the reasons I wanted to pick it up, because it's like they threw stuff to the wall. They literally said screw it and just said, you know what, we'll just make it as goofy and dumb as possible.
Yep.
And I was going to get this game anyhow because I do love the comics, but what really sold me on it was there's like videos and pictures of like the interactions between the characters, and some of the stuff they say to each other is so random and funny. Like Dick Grayson asks Batman if he wants to go out for Chinese. And I think there's a part where Hardy's like, you know, you fight my grandma, and Dick's like, you fought your grandmother? And all this random nonsense. I'm like, yeah, this is the type of game for me. So hopefully I'll check it out after the show is done.
Yeah, I'd recommend. You'd like it a lot. My only real complaint, besides the Xbox D-pad, is there's no block button.
Who blocks in a fighting
mechanics
game?
Mechanics are going back or down, and I really hate that in fighting games, but that's just a personal thing. And
you
Mortal
like
Kombat had
the
a
Mortal
block.
Kombat way better.
Feels really like spazzy. I don't know. Were you playing it too, Martin?
I only played the demo so far.
Okay. So yeah, that's all I've been playing this week.
Okay, Martin.
Well, we already talked about Luigi's Mansion. The other thing is I played through Zero Escape Virtue's Last Reward on the 3DS. There's also a Vita version, as far as I'm aware. I don't know if you know the game. It's basically the sequel to 999 on the DS. It's a visual novel combined with some puzzle solving, and basic premise is that you are nine people who are you are basically taken hostage in a facility somewhere, and you have to escape through various challenges and get points, because everyone has some points on the bracelet. If these points reach zero, you die. If you reach nine, you can get out. and well, yeah, you play through the puzzles, experience the storyline, and try to either betray or ally yourself with different people to get those points. I kind of don't want to talk too much about the storyline, because no matter what you say, it's kind of spoilery, and for visual novel, that's kind of the point, to experience the story. I'm just going to say it's, again, a lot of twists and turns, a lot of interesting concepts, even scientific concepts that are picked up in the storyline. And yeah, it also already kind of explains what the third game in the trilogy will be about. So I really, really like this game, and I don't know how I hammered through this game in such a short time, but I just couldn't put it down. It's just too good.
Well, that's always a great sign. It's better than keep on putting it down because you can't play through it. Speaking of, I mean, have you been playing anything else?
No, that's it.
Okay. And so, yeah, I have continued my quest with Rayman Legends Challenge app, which is a very long way to say it, but it continues to be a fun little thing, and I think, I mean, it's not everybody has a fully finished game they can put out a demo of for about 4 months, but I think it's a great way to advertise the game. It shows you why the gamepad is needed, and so far it's done a much better job of doing it than Nintendo has with their games. I think like the Murphy Dungeon is some of the best parts of the Challenge app, and I'm really curious to see how it plays on the other systems when it comes out. I like the leaderboard app. You know, it's a very minor thing. You can probably play for like 5 minutes a day and get the same thing. But just being able to compete with people globally for high scores, it kind of has that old arcade mentality where you just compete in the shape of as much time as possible from your game and stuff like that. And, you know, with a worldwide leaderboard and your friend's leaderboard, you always have some type of inert competition going on. So, yeah, it's a fun way to kind of keep Rayman in the spotlight, at least as far as Wii U owners go, until the game drops in September.
I kind of wish more people would do stuff like this, like with Blood Dragon coming out, which I have played as well. I'll talk about that next week, I guess. You know, if you've got the engine and you've got the assets, why not use them for something else after you're done? You don't have to, new game, you know. You can just do something quick and short and small that people appreciate, that doesn't stick around for too long. In this case, it's something you revisit every day. In the case of Blood Dragon, it's something you can be done in 4 hours.
Yes. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on Blood Dragon, because I want to pick it up, because it's like, again, my type of game.
All right, so, okay. If you're into 80s cartoons and stuff, right?
Which I am.
Buy Blood Dragon. If you're into crazy, really cheesy 80s movies and stuff, buy Blood Dragon. If you like Far Cry 3, buy Blood Dragon.
So basically, buy Blood Dragon.
Yeah, buy Blood Dragon, basically, because it's very cheap. You get about 5-6 hours out of it. It's not too long. They kind of sort of condensed Far Cry 3's main mechanics, so there's not any crafting anymore. When you level up, the game just gives you abilities. It doesn't say pick from a skill tree. You start off with some abilities automatically unlocked, so you get the ability to chain takedown from the start, and you get the ability to throw. It's a shuriken in this. It's a shuriken at somebody from if you take somebody down. There's less weapons, but you get a few more upgrades per weapon, and they're kind of crazy things, like the sniper rifle. You know, in games when you get like an explosive shot for a sniper rifle, it just does more damage for the most part. In Blood Dragon, what happens is you shoot something and you get a big explosion. You also get a shotgun, which you can upgrade to a quadruple barrel shotgun by the end of the game.
Nice.
And you also, they've changed some things around. So the outposts in Far Cry 3 were these little towns, whereas now they're kind of small they're kind of like fortresses, and you get three or four ways in, and then none of them are the same. There's like one that's underground, and there's one that's by a river, so you can go and take everybody out from the water if you want. And the way it works is these garrisons, that's what they call garrisons now, they have what's called a mega shield, and you get blood dragons, which is why the game's called Blood Dragon. You get blood dragons that walk around, and they're quite formidable, actually, to start off with. And they are kind of small dragons that shoot lasers out of their eyes. And I'm not talking about, like, pew, pew, pew. They sort of stand there, they get on their hind legs, and they charge it, and there's this massive laser that comes out of their eyes. It's great. And if you want, you can disable the mega shield by either destroying the generator or sneaking in and pressing a button. And then what that does is it attracts all the blood dragons that are nearby, and then you can, if you want, you can just stand by and watch the blood dragons eat all of the people in the garrison. It's great. So, if that sounds like your cup of tea, yeah, and it's full of neon, if you check my Steam account, there's a screenshot towards the end of the game, and all it is it just fills your screen with neon lights. It's great. So if you like 80s stuff, if you like cheese, if you like fun, and you like Far Cry 3, buy Blood Dragon. It's as simple as that.
Also, if you want everything to be cyber, it's the game for you.
Yes.
I think most importantly is that you don't actually have to own Far Cry 3.
No, you don't. That's the best thing about it, is you can just, if you ever thought, oh, I wish Far Cry 3 was 4 or 5 hours long, buy Blood Dragon. That's exactly what you get. And it doesn't lose anything because of it. They've streamlined
well,
it.
Well, except for animal carving. But you get Cyber Shark, so I get it all equals out.
Yeah. So, Blood Dragon is great. The humor's not going to be for some people. I appreciate that. If you don't appreciate, like, intentionally bad humor, then it's not for you.
And everybody knows I have attention to bad humor.
And
that's why I was so intrigued
by
it.
To Aliens, I think he was in one of the Terminator films as well. So, there's that.
So, yes, worth checking out. $15, Xbox Live, PSN, and PC. And I guess to wrap this up, I've been playing more of New Super Mario Brothers than you. And I gotta say, I always go into these games, and I kind of went into the same thing with 3D Land, where I'm always expecting to be disappointed with them, because it just seems like I've been here before, and I play the games, and I realize, like, it doesn't matter if I've been here before, they somehow find a way to make me come back and enjoy it time and time again. And I gotta say, like, the level design for New Super Mario Bros. U is insane. I don't know who builds these castles and airships for Koopa and his kids. I don't know if they deserve a raise or to be fired because these things shouldn't be had. But there's one level where you're, like, underwater the entire time. You're being chased by Torpedo Teds, which are the very distinct cousins of Bullet Bill. And it's just really fun, which is really odd because I hate underwater level stages in most games, but it works.
Yeah, but Nintendo has never done them to the point where they're annoying, just you move a bit slower, that's all, and you can't jump on things.
Yeah, but that's still kind of the reasons why people don't like underwater stages, it's because you lose a lot of your abilities.
I think it's mostly because game designers seem to think it's a good idea to have some sort of air mechanic in where you run out of air. That's never good. And Nintendo has never done that.
In Super Mario 64 they've done that.
Well,
I think the 3D Mario games do it, but it's such, you know, it's like get coins, which are usually everywhere. I mean, this game gives you, I think right now I have something like 75 lives. This game gives lives like candy. And, you know, it's not an issue because you aren't, you know, it's, Mario games aren't meant to be game over, at least not anymore. It's all about the ingenious level designs and these obstacles, and it seems like they understand that people speak 2D Marios now, so unlike New Super Mario Bros. Wii, this game doesn't really ramp up. It pretty much goes from like World 2 on, and I think part of it is because they don't do worlds anymore. Like, it's kind of like Super Mario World where everything's interconnected, So there are parts where you kind of get, you know, like after World Tour, it just splits off and there's multiple paths. Well, there's two paths. So like level design just ramps up there because there's no progression. Like it's World 1, World 2, World 3. It's just like, you know, what we're just going to make these levels tough as hell. There was one level that reminded me of Super Mario Bros. 2. I don't know how well your memory is with that game, but the ice levels where Mario has like no control over his grip or anything. Yeah. And then there's a, like those little pink, like those little puff things that come across the screen. So you're jumping and dodging and ducking underneath them while these like, wasps with like pitchforks come attack you. And it's just insane because it's not really about the platforming at that point. It's just kind of navigating all the hazards. And it's like one of the best levels in the game so far to me because it's one of those things where you're just trying to navigate a bunch of stuff. Again, there are two types of levels I don't really care for in games. It's water and ice level because I hate using that traction. But if you build it into the game in a way that it's, you know, it's working against you, but it can work for you, it works geniusly, and they do a fantastic job of it in this game. I mean, almost every other level I've played in this game is like, oh, I love this level. You know, it's a great design and stuff like that. And I get the criticism with the design, the look of the game, but I love the backgrounds in this game. They are so... Like the backgrounds are the best looking part of the game because the character models and stuff we've kind of seen before, it's just really it's not even not HD now, it's just really shiny.
Do you play on the gamepad a lot or just on your TV?
I play on the gamepad a lot. It's one of those things that I love because, like, I'm not doing it right now, but it's one of those things where I can sit here either recording the podcast, editing it, or doing something on my computer. I just have it on my app. Or, you know, like while you're watching TV or something like that. And the thing with this is and I assume it kills the battery, but it streams on both devices right away. So it's not like the other games where you can alternate. It's like it's whatever is on the gamepads on the screen. So, like, you don't have to press any button. You can turn off the TV and just continue your game as nothing happens.
And it also helps that Mario's the kind of, like, Super Mario's the kind of game that lends itself well to portability. So you can just pick it up and just walk around the house and maybe grab something to eat or something and still play.
Yeah. It does have that... I understand why they do it, but it's one of the things... It's one of the few things I dislike about the new Super Mario Bros. Games is that they have that... You can only save after every castle. So basically every four levels or so. And it's always kind of... Like, again, you know, it's not a handheld game, it's a console game, but like, maybe sometimes you just want to play one or two levels and be done with it, but you have to kind of just check through, like, for it. They do have a quick save function, which only asks once, so if you come back to it, you have to do it again, but it's one of those things. I will also say this much, because I know it gets a lot of hate, and I'm probably in the extreme minority with it, but I love the soundtrack to it, too. I do love the fact that the enemies dance to the music. I've always thought that to be a very charming little addition to the game. And it does work into the game, because you sometimes have to time your jumps and stuff to the music in case they stop before you're going to jump on them and do their little dance. And I have it's even better when you add Yoshi's to it, because it adds like an underlying drum beat to it, and it sounds really good. You still kind of get that dick move where you use Yoshi as a last minute ditch to get an extra goal, or whatever. Yoshi has no other purpose. And while it's not my favorite flying mechanic, the squirrel suit, at least the wingsuit looks kind of gnarly, but it's not my favorite. I prefer the tail from Mario 3, and the cape is a better glider than that. So, and there was also boss battles are broken in this game, I feel like, because with either ice or fire Mario, you can pretty much dominate them.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, especially Boom Boom, because with Ice Mario, you can pretty much freeze him in the middle of his jump. He'll break out pretty quickly, but you can just jump on him if you time it well enough, and he won't pose a threat at all. That's kind of a bummer. But, I mean, boss battles have never been as strong. Not the 2D Marios. I think the 3D Marios do bosses well, but...
I'd agree 2D, with that, too.
The 2D ones, it's the three stomp on the heads three times and whatever.
It's a lot easier to have variety in boss fights if you're in 3D, so...
It is, but it isn't in some ways, because it's one of the few things that I think New Super Mario Bros. DS did best, is that they had a ton of different bosses, because they didn't do it for kids. And it's one of the things they kind of went away with. But, I would also say that there is... I had a boss battle against Koopa, Bowser Jr., and that was pretty awesome because it's in an underwater again, and you basically it's basically just swimming around him and trying to get torpedoes to hit him while they're homing in on you. But he's kind of a dick, and he'll kind of summon them from other places while you're trying to do it. But it's a fun, again, an underwater stage that I enjoyed from start to finish, which doesn't happen that often. I have no idea what world I'm in. I'm in the Forest of Illusion. It's very based off of Mario World, so a lot of the stuff is kind of in that design. So this is their Forest of Illusion equivalency. So I don't know if that's like World 5 or 6. It seems to be going by pretty quirky, but, you know, that usually happens when you're having fun. I'm sure people have bought it because if you own a Wii U, it's probably the only reason you own a Wii U at this point. But I guess you're more in an own Monster Hunter. But, yeah, it's a... Wait, you sold your Wii U, right?
Yeah.
So yeah,
that was
it's not
quick.
Well, I guess we'll kind of parlay this into news, is that EA announced this week officially that Madden 25 actually won't be coming to the Wii U, and I think it wasn't this announcement. It was an announcement beforehand, where it pretty much signals that third parties are either abandoning ship or taking an extreme wait and see approach with this console. And I think that's where Martin decided to bail out.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, also, I played Monster Hunter, and it's kind of the main reason I wanted it. And Monster Hunter 4 will be on the 3DS, so whatever.
I don't like selling systems, because if I eventually want to buy it again later on the road, yeah, it might be cheaper, but you end up losing money in the long run. But, yeah, I mean, I think Nintendo losing Madden in and of itself isn't a big deal, but I think the notion behind it that, you know, like a major third-party publisher like EA isn't backing them with their full support is kind of a very damning thing for the system.
And it's not just, you know, it's one thing to not bring, you know, like a Crysis 3 to the Wii U or something, but,
yeah,
you know, a game like Madden or FIFA, which is also has a questionable future on Wii U, like, these games are on every possible platform, and EA specifically puts them on every possible platform. But
yeah, just keep in mind, for example, FIFA still comes out on PS2.
Well, it's not only that, it's like Nintendo have lost what could have been their this generation's boom blocks. Because that
was
by EA. So
that was by EA, but I mean, in the long haul, that type of stuff is important, but, I mean, it's, yes, I mean, like, not, like Jason said, not getting every minor EA game isn't an issue, but the fact that a franchise that they literally put on anything with a post, I think they might have been Madden's on smartphones at some point, I could be mistaken in that regard.
They do have that, they do have that.
Yeah, so, the fact that, I mean, it's a damning sign, it's a very questionable decision at times, but we don't know the business politics behind it, because
I'm pretty sure I can understand why.
First thing I want to say,
most people, I think, including me, started to worry about this when a lot of other third-party games that you would think could actually come out no problem at all on the Wii U, like when you see like Saints Row 4 or something like that, and that's not even coming to the Wii U. That was already started to be questionable. And I think I talked before about the problem of third parties and the Wii U, and that they will all probably go all in with the new Xbox and the new PlayStation. And those, on some level, those engines will be problematic on the significantly weaker Wii U, and it's probably just not worth the trouble.
You see, I've always thought this was kind of backwards thinking, because logically speaking,
you might be thinking that's backwards thinking, but
yeah,
but
you're the one who just said that they still make PS2 games. What's the excuse there?
They're not making
a new engine. They are still using the same
That's kind of my point. It's like, especially with this year, they could have ported over the engines from the 360 and PS3 version so that you have a basis to make a Wii U version going in the future. And that's kind
of the
idea.
The last time they did a game for...
And they've already got an engine on Wii U, which is the one that they used for FIFA 2012.
Yeah, which was FIFA 13, but that actually was FIFA 12, not FIFA 13, which they ported with some bonus stuff.
Yeah, but my logic has always been, if you put an engine there from the get-go, so that when it comes to it, you have an engine in place to get these games across. Because right now it's a very weak system. It has no major support. It's not selling anything really. Does that necessarily mean that's going to be the case in a year? We don't necessarily know that.
No, we don't.
The thing is with publishers, a lot of the time when they say, "Oh, software doesn't sell," a lot of the time it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you don't make the software available, it's not going to sell at all, is it? So, EA needs to. I reckon EA needs to at least put more weight until Nintendo, because Nintendo's got to have something sorted by the end of this year.
So the problem is that the Wii U is not selling well at all. So even if you release something like...
Well, that's what I'm saying, is EA, Nintendo needs to fix this year. And EA can't even give them that time.
Well, I mean, it seems like EA's stuff with Nintendo might have to do with sales, but it might have to do with it beyond that. Because even when... I mean, like, some of these decisions have to have been made well in advance of the system coming out, because you don't decide that you're not going to do Madden on it in November, December of the year.
Well, yeah, because you need to make the game.
Yeah, you needed to start it ahead of time.
Well, who says they weren't working on it on some forum, and they did make Madden 13 at launch.
Yeah.
So.
And again, I'm not saying there's no way to justify the Wii U sell at this point. They are selling showy, but I don't and this is a discussion we had about third parties. It's at no point was it going, there was no hook to the Wii U that somebody would have bought Madden and FIFA over the 360 and PS3 version months after release on these other popular systems. It's the same thing with Mass Effect and Batman. It's these are games that were ancient at this point.
It's not
which,
2 years old.
Yeah. And that's the type of stuff. I understand that you need those type of games to, you kind of want them out there to kind of build support, but if you're not following through on that, or if you're using that as your baseline to say, we're not going to go through with this because it makes no sense financially, it seems to be backwards thinking, because, again, the whole purpose of these games isn't to sell a million units, because you don't get that at launch. But it's to kind of say, we're going to support this system with Madden and FIFA in the future, so you can get it next year when it comes out day and date and stuff like that. So, I mean, it's troubling from a third party's perspective that people like EA is kind of, and we haven't had official word on Call of Duty Ghost yet either. It's kind of back and forth. They didn't announce it with the rest of them, but they did say that, they haven't released plans for the next gen version yet. And that seems to be that it's because it's tied in with the next Xbox launch, reveal, I should say. So I guess we'll see when they announce that then. But it's one of those things where it doesn't look good from a perspective point. Because I'm honestly speaking, how many people would have bought a Wii U for Madden and stuff like that? Isn't the deal. It's the deal that these companies don't have the faith in the system as it is now to support it.
I think your idea of, was it last week, of Nintendo setting up a small company just to say, look, we'll port your your games to Wii U for you. I think that's a very good idea. I mean, because it's Nintendo solving a problem, one of the problems that they caused a long time ago, and...
I understand it, but I still think it's so stupid to kind of hold a grudge.
Yeah, it's very silly.
And some of the companies don't even make sense. Deep Silver, as far as I know, have never had a history on Nintendo systems.
No.
It's just one of those things that the industry has perpetrated that you can't
sell. Well, I think with some Deep Silver, I think it's more of a problem is they don't have any next-gen plans at the moment, and obviously they're not going to say, oh yeah, Wii U, we'll just do it on Wii U.
Yeah, but I mean,
you can bet your ass they have plans for PS4 or the next Xbox.
Well, the thing is,
Deep Silver hasn't been a terribly big company up until now, and they haven't had anything of notoriety. So I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't have that many next gen plans.
Well, I mean, I assume what they said is they won't be there year one. They'll probably, it kind of makes sense if you're a small company. You went to an install basis there and then you do games. They can kind of continue to release PS3 and 360 games for a year or two. And, cause there's install base of 150 million people between those two. And then you can wait until the next Xbox and the PS4 have an install base of like 10, 20 million people. And then you can start releasing games to an already mature user base and stuff like that.
Yeah,
that's what business.
Nintendo needs to have a sort of a kind of an outreach program to say, look, we'll do it for you. If you don't want to do it, we'll do it for you, and we'll fund it as well.
The problem with that then is that it kind of becomes this like. I understand why they need to do it from a business standpoint, but I think the prolonged damage would be that then every third party would expect Nintendo to do all their work for them.
I guess.
And it's not something you can keep up on the long term. And you can't really buy these people because, there's that old industry myth that the Xbox was revealed. Microsoft went around paying people to bring their games to the Xbox. So other third-party publishers came to Microsoft asking for a handout because they thought they were just as good to get money from them. So it's one of those things where you have to, I think we mentioned this last week. If they need to focus on certain avenues where they can find success. They need to work on, fostering relations with indie developers, with smaller publishers like Level 5 and Atlas and stuff like that, XSEED.
For Sony currently, fostering indies. So,
Because the problem with Nintendo isn't that they can't sell a system on their own. We've seen that happen three generations in a row now. It's that once you kind of get that, you need to expand beyond your core base, and that's where third parties come into. So they need games like, Bayonetta and Wonderful 101 that doesn't necessarily appeal to that core Nintendo demographic, but they need to announce more of those games. And I also think they need to expand that to the West, because Wonderful 101, Bayonetta, Shin Megami, X, Fire Emblem are all very Japanese games in design and Japanese companies. I'm sure there are Western third parties who are small and have some interesting game that they can probably resurrect or help fund to release on their system. It's a very interesting time for them.
Extra, we got three.
Yeah, we got three. And much to my behest, there was no gameplay at all.
Yeah, it looks like we will probably not get much gameplay until shortly before release.
And from what I've heard, they've put in some really small stuff, like that. It's just typical Rockstar nowadays, actually, to see that, if you commit a crime on the street, somebody will take a photo of you and then go report you to the police. I'm sorry, how does that improve my gameplay experience at all? It's a nice little detail, but when you think about how it impacts how you play the game, I can imagine just having the police on me all the time. And what was the least fun part of GTA games? Oh, having the police on you. Unless it was the first one.
Yeah, it sounds like they are doing a bunch of small improvements, but I don't know, major.
I don't think we're going to see anything particularly major. I know that they've copied the bullet time from Max Payne and put it in, and
More Red Dead Revolver.
Oh, really?
Red Dead Redemption. It's more of a reference for the bullet time thing.
Yeah,
how it's supposed to work.
But it's just like it's just all superficial things. And as I was saying on Twitter when the trailers actually came out, as far as I'm concerned, Red Faction Guerrilla and Sleeping Dogs and Saints Row 3 are all better than GTA nowadays, because they at least try to do something novel with their gameplay. They may not be 100% successful with it, but I can go and destroy every building in the game in Red Faction Guerrilla, and I can, there's a robust hand-to-hand combat system in Sleeping Dogs, and I'm being given toys all the time in Saints Row 3, and the story is really crazy and stuff. So, you know, if you're just saying, oh, it's GTA 4, again. And so, actually, one of the offences I saw was, yeah, but there's three people this time. There's three people in GTA 4. So, you know.
I think, and again, this is just, it's like, watching it, it's like, and one of the reasons I like Saints Row, yeah, Ghost City, and all that other stuff, is because they don't take themselves seriously. With GTA, it looks like it wants to be this very, like, it wants to be like a mobster movie, but it doesn't do it as well.
Yeah.
So, I'm just, and again, you know, this is a minor pet peeve, and it's something that I probably just picked up on. I'm sure it wasn't intentional. But I'm just sitting there watching, I'm like, so, you have a rich dude, you have a redneck, and you have to make the one bad guy the gangster in this game who has rap music during his trailer. I'm like, very, like, how much of a story? Why couldn't the bad guy be the rich
dude?
I would
typical.
Even think a bad redneck.
Yeah, it's very typical stuff.
I also thought it was kind of funny because I saw that part of, what's this guy's name? Is Franklin? Franklin, I think. And I saw it, and then I thought, that kind of reminds me a bit too much of San Andreas.
My biggest pet peeve is also when Saints Row 4 comes out, I know I'm going to get a PC version the same day, whereas am I going to have to wait another 9 months to get GTA 5 on PC, even if I wanted it? You know, it's just insane that, like, I don't even know with Rockstar, because Max Payne 3, it was, what, a month maybe? Maybe it was the same day? But with GTA 4, it was 9 months. So, at least the game I want is going to give me a version that I can play the same day.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure I also enjoyed GTA 4 a lot. And I'm sure this will end up being a quality game. It just...
Oh, yeah.
Like
I'm not saying it won't be, but I just think that it's just going to be your typical GTA fare where you'll play it and you'll enjoy it the first time. But you'll come back to it and think, this game isn't as good as I remember it being.
Yeah, probably. And the other thing that still bothers me, and I guess we will still not know for sure until we see it, is that I'm really worried about how this is even going to run and look on these current consoles. Because, I mean, I already questioned it when I saw the screenshots in the trailers. And, I mean, was it Steven Totillo who said, like, when he saw the game, that it didn't look at all like the trailers? It said it looked worse, and that surprised me.
I was about to say, I mean, that seems to be a staple of game trailers, but, at least somebody's calling them out on it.
I always thought, like, these screenshots are way too clean, and these trailers are also way too clean and way too fluent for what they're showing. What we're showing there must be running from better PC version, is what I'm guessing.
That will be game, I was like.
Yeah.
I just felt, and I don't like to share my opinions on this stuff because it doesn't interest me. But yeah, I was watching this, and I think it was the day after was the next point was Call of Duty Troy. I'm just like, two of the biggest franchises in gaming, and they do nothing for me.
And well, like, they don't do anything to differ themselves from each other. That's why.
But you know, GTA is wise enough that it's an event because it doesn't come out that often, so people still kind of get that anticipation and that hype around it. But it does seem like GTA more, and yeah, it's just whatever. So I guess that will bring us to the other thing, which was that I don't even know why they make an event of this anymore because everybody knows it's coming. But Call of Duty Ghosts was announced.
I had a real problem with this trailer. This teaser or whatever. I mean, they are going to reveal it at the Microsoft thing, whatever. But at least show me something of the game. This is absolutely nothing for me. Absolutely nothing. It didn't tell me what the game is about. It didn't tell me how the game is going to look or play or anything.
Martin, you're so confused, mate. They've got 8 demos out. You don't
at least
need
they're
a
using a new
to
engine.
Tell you what's going to be in the new Call of Duty game.
At least they're using a new engine. So that's something, I guess.
but it would be the same crap, and you know it. Do you know how different was GTA 4 from San Andreas, and they changed the engine then?
I know. I still would like to see the game at least. Is that too much?
I haven't even seen this trailer thing. That's how little I care. After Black Ops 2, which was a waste of money. I didn't even play
Black Ops 2.
I care less about GTA than I do GTA... I care less about COD than I do GTA 5.
Oh, well. I care more about Battlefield anyway, so... And I've seen that.
Yes, they at least showed us gameplay of that. Press F to cut off leg. Call of Duty doesn't have that. That's
true.
One thing that Call of Duty doesn't have. Emotions. Press F to cut off leg.
That's probably true.
I love the sheer amount of excitement in just we can't even speak about it. That's how good Call of Duty Ghosts is going to be.
Yep.
Amazing.
It's going to be awesome. Yep. I have real trouble being excited for it. I mean, not only is it going to be probably the same, I mean, it's probably maybe even going to be worse, like Modern Warfare 3 was, at least the single player portion, because there are, again, like four teams working on it. We already know Infinity Ward, Raven, and Neversoft are apparently all working on it.
And Sledgehammer, don't get Sledgehammer.
Okay, sorry about that door. So yeah, anything else about Call of Duty while I was gone that I don't really care to talk about?
No, we just bitched a bit.
Good people. So, yeah, are you excited to see what it is at the Microsoft event?
I'm not excited for the Microsoft event at all. I'm not looking forward to anything, let alone the new Call of Duty.
I wouldn't say I'm excited. I have, like, what should I call it? Professional interest?
I'm excited for it because it's new hardware, but yeah, I think I'm in the camp where I want to watch it because I follow the gaming industry, not because I'm interested in this.
Yeah, here, same here.
And I also think that if you're big, you know, like the one thing we know about it for sure is that Call of Duty is going to be there. That doesn't help. I mean,
well, not to mention it's been at the Microsoft E3 for God knows how many years now. What was it, Modern Warfare 2 that they started doing it?
Yeah,
so
they have the DLC lockdown, so of course we're going to show it every year.
Well, I mean, and we won't get too much into rumors, but right now it sounds like the two of the big games that's going to be there is Call of Duty and Respawn's new shooter, and I'm just thinking, like, are you just dubbing
that's
down?
That's kind of ironic, actually, that they're in the same room at the same time, demoing probably the same thing.
What would be even funnier if in at E3 they add another Halo to it?
Oh dear!
Yeah,
it's really shooter.
I'm a Halo fan, and that would just oh my god!
And that's kind of what I'm afraid of going into this event, because right now it sounds like Microsoft knows, okay, our audience likes shooters, so we're not even going to try. I mean, that's the start of this generation, that generation, whatever you want to call it. You know, they went out of their way to kind of make amends with Japanese gamers. So we had RPGs, we had stuff like Dead Rising and Lost Planet and Condemned. Yeah, they weren't all big hits, but they were diversifying their lineup. Now it just seems like, okay, shooters selling our system, so we're going to go shooter. I mean, maybe they have some other stuff in development.
Right.
Yeah, so
which
they say Rise
apparently is going to be pretty disappointed from sources.
Yeah. Yeah, we won't go too much into rumors. It's been an interesting week for the Xbox, as it has been for some time. And let's hope that all this is false, because Microsoft just wants to blow expectations so they can blow people away. speaking of blowing expectations, Precursor Game, which is the, I guess, dead remnant of Silicon Knights, announced not a Kickstarter, because you can't do it if you're Canadian, which I didn't know, but a crowdsourced program for their spiritual successor to Eternal Darkness called, what is it, Darkness of the Eternals?
Woo! Shadow of the Eternals.
Shadow of the Eternals.
Woo!
The thing is, can you do... So Eternal Darkness's gimmick was these, I think they were called sanity effects, were they? Where it looked like your TV was on the blink, or it looked like your save got deleted. Can you really do that again and have
apparently
the same
they're going to.
Yes, do you know why? Because nobody else has done it.
I have to say, one, you can't do it because apparently Nintendo owns the copyright to that.
They are so going to. They
get around it in some way, but yeah.
And two things. First thing about this whole Shadow of Eternals thing, it's the precursor games, all ex-Silicon Knights guys, and apparently Dennis Dyack is the COO of this company.
Why did they put him back in charge?
Why would you give Dennis Dyack money?
So
that's my main concern. Yeah. It's like, of all the people in the industry I would give money to, he's absolutely asking me.
That's the first thing I wanted to say. Don't give Dennis Dyack money. Don't. Just don't. Even if you have fond memories of Eternal Darkness, don't. It's the worst thing you could ever do.
His company's coming out of bankruptcy. Well, actually, his company isn't bankruptcy.
All the games have been shit.
That's not true.
It's true.
They made one good one.
Eternal Darkness was really good. Twin Snakes was really celebrated.
Yeah, Twin Snakes. Oh, Twin Snakes was already.
Two Human wasn't as good as it could have been, but it was. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Twin Snakes, I give it half of it because most of the game was already Kojima's outline. It just kind of made over the top action scenes to it. But yes, I was going to say Eternal Darkness and Twin Snakes were both supervised by better companies in Nintendo and Nintendo Konami. And since Silicon Knights has been given free reign, we've seen Two Human and we've seen X-Men Destiny.
What a great game that was.
So yeah, giving them free reign with Dyack
two
in charge.
Games. You have to keep in mind, two games, not only were they awful, but two games that spawned them to get sued.
And to be fair, Dennis Dyack is worse than Peter Molyneux. In every way. You know, we're talking about a guy who was like, oh, if you keep talking about those awful cutscenes we put in Two Human when you die, you must love them. No, that's not how it works, Dennis Dyack. That's not how it works.
And the other thing about this thing is I would be highly skeptical of it. Because when you've seen the teaser, whatever they call this thing, we have seen... previous renders from what was their pitch for Eternal Darkness 2. Apparently to Nintendo, or maybe even other companies. I'm not quite sure how that worked out. Anyway, nobody wanted it. That's the first thing that should be an alarm signal. And the second is that apparently it's the same thing, because these renders show up in this trailer thing, just with spikes on them.
And here's the biggest thing, right? Here's the biggest thing is obviously there is absolutely no accountability for this kind of scheme. So something will go wrong, maybe they'll get sued again, and then your money's gone and you don't get no game.
And let's talk about that, because when this originally came out, the goal was $1.1 million, which is a lot of money, but it's feasible. We've seen
it's fairly reasonable.
But then it happened that it's not $1.1 million; it's $1.5 million, and it's not $1.5 million for the game; it's $1.5 million for the first episode of a 12-part series.
No,
not going to happen.
I did not know that, and even if I had any kind of interest in this game, I now do not.
Even with people interested, I don't think they could crowdfund the whole thing. I really don't think that.
No, I think maybe if this was Eternal Darkness 2, if it didn't have Dennis Dyack, and if it was maybe $1.5 million for the game to be finished up, it had a chance.
I
can't see...
I don't know. Keep going.
I was gonna say with and okay, I own a Wii U. I like the Wii U. I like Nintendo enough. I don't think there's enough Wii U owners at this point to justify this game, because right now it's only Wii U and PC. One of their stretch goals would be to get it onto other systems. So right now you're kind of hoping for Nintendo fans' good graces that they are nostalgic enough for a game that came out almost a decade ago for a company that abandoned them this generation for greener pastures.
Oh, greener in inverted quotes.
Well, I mean, you know, the grass is always greener on the other side until you get there. But yes, so you're kind of, it's kind of like you're going back with hat in hand, begging for some handout for your ex-girlfriend because your new girlfriend wasn't what you expected it to be, and you're hoping that they'll take you back and forgive you and give you $1.5 million.
Yeah, the thing is this just continues the trend of, oh, let's not make something new. Let's just piggyback on the name that you used to know and you used to love and make that again.
Well, you see, I don't mind that because, like as Jason said, there is no other game like Eternal Darkness on the market. I mean, it's not like it's a genre that's oversaturated with a bunch of clones and copies. There's one Eternal Darkness. So I have no problem with them going back to
that. But in hindsight, Eternal Darkness is a pretty flawed game, if you think about it. I don't think Eternal Darkness is very special, except for Insanity and things. But that's just
which
I never liked
it. Is.
I agree with you, because like the combat isn't that great. It's graphically kind of ugly for the time. Yeah. Even back then, it was kind of rough. It was mostly the storytelling and the insanity effects, the, you know, the three paths going to stuff like that that made it special. But as a whole, but I mean, a lot of first games are kind of rough, which is why we usually give sequels a chance to improve on that format.
If they really wanted to do, if Nintendo wanted to do a sequel, we would have seen one probably 2 years later on a Nintendo system.
Well, I think Nintendo wanted to do a sequel, which is how this came to be. And then Nintendo, right, they were getting into bed with Dyack, and his company was being sued from every which direction and losing money, so they probably thought it wasn't worth the investment. Because this game looks like it's pretty far on. Granted, it wouldn't be out until the end of next year anyhow. So, yeah. But the idea of an Eternal Darkness sequel, the idea of that is interesting. The idea of it being crowdfunded isn't so bad. The idea of Dyack, who hates internet people, who has gone on rants and raves about people online, gamers, coming to them and asking for money.
Wasn't there something between Dennis Dyack and NeoGaf, like, pretty big?
Yeah.
He ranted and raved. There was a thing for Two Human For or Against, where he had people kind of sign up if they were supporting him and his vision for Two Human, or if they were against him and Two Human. And if it came out and did well in reviews, everybody who was against him has to apologize and some nonsense like that. And I think he went on
crazy.
Big time. And I think he went on an episode of the One-Up Show, and he ranted and raved about it as well. I think he's also the guy who did the One Console Future.
Yeah.
Oh,
him.
Oh God.
For the record, I was against and I was right.
I think most people were right who were against. And I will also say, and this has nothing to do with anything. Well, I mean, we won't talk. I actually do believe in the One Console Future, but that, you know, his idea of it was novel. I think people just misinterpreted it as like one system, but he kind of meant like an industry standard for what you would have.
Yeah.
Which makes sense, especially when you have, you know.
We're kind of heading towards that anyway. If the 360, if the new Xbox has all AMD hardware, that's all PC, like the same
stuff.
Well, see,
so you're saying, he's kind of right.
Pretty much we had a one console feature with the PS2, the PS3, and the 360 with the same system. The outlier is always Nintendo. I was going to say Nintendo and now mobile gaming and stuff like that have kind of thrown a monkey wrench into that. But yeah, the idea of a one console system is pretty much what Microsoft and Sony have been leading toward this past generation, leading into the next one, where they're pretty much identical systems with, you know, online for Microsoft and Sony with the Blu-ray player and everything else. But the core is still pretty much there. They're the same type of, they're pretty on par as far as paper goes. You know, the PS3 is more powerful, but it's not that big of a deal. But like I said, it's just weird that of all people, Dyack. I want to see Eternal Darkness 2. I want to see it by the original people. I don't want to see him involved in it at all. So,
if this was a project without anything Dyack, then I might be more positive about it.
That's my major thing. The other thing, again, is $1.5 million for an episode of the game.
Yeah, that's just insane.
Yeah.
Alright, well, I'm just going to throw my 2 cents into the hate right here. But I, for one, am ecstatic about this project. I've been wanting Eternal Darkness forever. And you can say all the bad stuff you want about Dennis Dyack. I'm not going to really sit here and defend him. He's kind of brought the stuff about himself. I don't see him as this hated figure. And whatever else you say, like, the first Eternal Darkness probably wouldn't have happened without him. So I'm interested to see what the crowdsourcing thing ends up being. I'd say there's a good chance I personally will probably throw some money into it, depending on what it is. I also have very little faith this will be successful. But I'm glad they're trying, at least, because I really want another Eternal Darkness game. That was one of my favorite games from that generation. And yeah, it was flawed. I mean, it was a launch game.
It was in development since N64.
It was a launch window game, whatever.
Was it? I thought it came out like the second year.
Yeah.
Let's find out. You can keep talking. I'll check it out.
Okay. Well, anyway, it was relatively close to launch, and whatever else, like it was really unique at the time. It's still really unique. From a storytelling perspective, Assassin's Creed is the only thing that even comes close in terms of, you know, handling multiple time periods, and even then it's a totally different concept. Like, you only really do one or two, whereas Eternal Darkness took place over like two or three centuries with all these different people, and all their actions kind of tie into, you know, what's going on to the others. And it's, and of course, Daniel mentioned that sanity effects obviously gets a lot of publicity. And I don't know. I mean, I'm interested to see what happens. Like I said, I don't really have much faith it's gonna get pulled off. But
I will say this much.
Also say, like, X-Men Destiny. Like, obviously, it's a terrible.
Are you gonna defend
game.
That game?
No. I'm defending. It's a terrible, terrible game. But it's not that fair to point to that game and say this is, like, truly indicative of what they can do. Because we've heard, there's been stories about, like, they weren't really trying. They were even siphoning off money, which I think is one of the losses.
How does that make it better?
I'm just saying it's not better. And to human was all the shit, so whatever.
But not only does that make sense, but when you're asking people for money, the defense should agree. They would
that, with that point, I agree. Like, it's really shady to be, like, asking people for money, giving some of
Jason, let's put it this way, right? When other companies siphon money off that they shouldn't be, Gearbox. At least they end up making good games with that money, you know. Whereas,
well, this could be the Borderlands that we've been waiting for. So I mean, I don't know. I realize I'm in the definite minority here, but I'm just gonna throw it out there. If there's anyone else that's excited, you're not alone.
I will say this much. I am kind of curious to see what they can do with the Wii U as far as insanity effects go. I think having a second screen and having a second sound source would be very cool for the game.
Yeah. But they're going to do it on PC. How would you do that on PC?
Yeah, exactly. You make so how is it going to work?
I don't think you have to make the same game. You could put stuff in there that's the stinky Wii U.
That's way too much effort for a crowdfunded game.
Although, Jason, if you if it turns out that it gets funded and it turns out to be really good, you can all slap us in the face with it.
Yeah.
In a thousand chance.
We'll have a for and against vote on this show, and then if you're for it...
Yes.
Yes, you can slap me in the face with your digital copy of the game.
The other thing is, and this is kind of where I'm iffy as far as donating money, is you don't have that Kickstarter buffer, so I don't even know how this works. We don't have exact details. So, like, is it automatically, like, with Kickstarter, if a project isn't funded, they don't get any of that money. Like, with this, is it, like, a donation drive?
Right. I feel like it's probably a donation. By the way, Eternal Darkness came out June of 2002, so roughly 7 months after launch.
Yeah, so
not really launch window. Maybe like Wii U launch window.
At this point, the Wii U's launch window is kind of like this barn door that's just thrown open.
It just, it's like the wind. It slams shut and it swings open again, and you don't know whether
it's still,
open or
it's
shut
still like that first wave of, or first generation of titles.
So yeah, I mean, it's an interesting prospect. I'm curious to see how it does. As you know, it's always interesting to see how these big projects go about. But yeah, Dennis Dyack really does put a hamper on this for me. So, anything else before we begin to wrap?
Not that I'm aware of. Buy Blood Dragon, yes.
Buy Blood Dragon,
because it's awesome.
And don't give Dennis Dyack money. Thank you.
Yeah, it's the money that you were going to spend on giving to Dennis Dyack, buy Blood Dragon instead. Because that way you actually get a game that was made and is actually good.
It or you can do both. Great okay. idea.
Yeah. So yeah, I guess before we go, I was supposed to ask this question last week, but we got sidetracked with that discussion about Japanese companies blaming American counterparts. I guess, what is your favorite Kirby game? I don't know why that came into mind, but it's something... Kirby's like a franchise people never talk about.
Canvas Curse.
See, that's interesting, because you pick a game and it's going to be completely different from most of the other ones.
Yeah, I don't really like most of the other ones.
That's a very good question. I like Squeak Squad.
Oh, I didn't play that one.
My favorite is the original NES one.
That's Kirby's Adventure.
Actually, I changed my mind. My favorite Kirby game is Super Smash Brothers.
That doesn't count.
That doesn't count at all.
That is such an extreme stretch of the definition of a Kirby game. But it is built on the Kirby engine, which is actually you'd think it would be built on Mario, but it is what it is. I am going to go... The only one I actually have ever beaten is Epic Yawn, so I'm going with that one.
Oh, I didn't play that one either. Damn. Yeah, I missed a lot of Kirby games. I don't think I played the SNES one either.
There's a lot of Kirby games. they said they're very different because Canvas Curse is different from Squeak Squad, which is different from Mass Attack.
And Air Ride, they're just all over the place.
Yeah, Kirby seems to be like Nintendo to experiment with something franchise.
Yeah.
Which works for it because he's an enduring character, which makes no sense because he has no personality. He's a pink puffball.
Well, I think his personality is the fact that he can just be whatever the fuck he wants. He eats something and that's it. You are that.
You are what you eat.
Yeah.
Okay, so very since we're all ended on this terrible joke, it's time to go. So for Jason, Martin, Daniel, and myself, this has been Dual World in episode 108.
Bye, Blood Dragon.
Don't give Dennis like money.